This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 225 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Good. If you like blizzards, a lot of snow, a lot of wind. Oh, it's quite a day, but we've got this to look forward to the next half hour or so, talking about drones and unmanned aircraft.
And it's a new year. We're recording this in 2018. We are sorry that we missed last week, but it was a good break for me. And I know you had circumstances that were beyond your control. So we're starting off with 2018. Any prognostications before we get started?
No, I think I'm just ready to go.
All right. Well, then let's hit it. Well, the first news story comes from Fool.com. Air Force could test flying aircraft carriers as early as next year. Gotta love a story that includes C-130s and drones.
Your two favorite aircraft, I guess, or close to it. The C-130, anyway.
So, little history before we get into the story is C-130s have been carrying drones a very long time. They were the main drone launcher for the United States Navy and the Air Force in Vietnam, Ryan Firebees. And so DC-130s have been around a long time, but they're good at launching them, but they didn't really recover them. There were some attempts with the Fulton satellite recovery system to recover drones. But what we're talking about is a little more sophisticated.
Yes, it is. This is the DARPA Gremlins program. DARPA, of course, is the United States Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and they are dedicated to, David, advancing technology in a lot of different ways, on a lot of different fronts, I guess.
DARPA is a think tank, is the best way to, but they do it with technology, and they're a way for the Pentagon to test things without actually being necessarily included into the military projects, but it has its own budget. And it's, like I said, a think tank would be a good way to describe it.
So this Gremlins project or program features these relatively small, I guess, reusable drones that would be launched from, at least initially, a C-130 in flight. And they can then go off and do their surveillance thing or attack targets or whatever the mission is, and as much as 300 miles away. So I guess, David, the idea here is that this would be a way to project a presence farther than we can now. Is that a good way to view this?
Yeah, the term we would use in the military would be it's a standoff weapon system, meaning that the C-130 would fly in airspace that was not hostile, and the drones would go into the hostile airspace.
So DARPA describes this on their website, this program, and they say the program envisions launching groups of UASs from existing large aircraft, such as bombers or transport aircraft, as well as from fighters and other small fixed-wing platforms, while those planes are out of range of adversary defenses. When the Gremlins complete their mission, a C-130 transport aircraft would retrieve them in the air, carry them home, and their ground crews would prepare them for their next use. And they look for a 24-hour turnaround on these things. So there's several phases to this program. I guess we've seen phase one completed, I suppose, but in phase two, DARPA would review the prototype Gremlins developed by two companies, Dynetics and General Atomics. And then in phase three, DARPA would select one of those two prototypes, and they say, quote, a full-scale technology demonstration system would then be test flown in 2019, next year.
It's technology that we've used before, but it is kind of amazing thinking about a drone flying into the back of a C-130 to be captured. And they haven't really said anything about how the system is set up for the retrieval of the aircraft. So it'll be interesting whether it'll be a net or a sling or whatever to recover these. And we know who General Atomics is, but the other competitor is Dynetics. And they're an active in a number of sectors: automotive, IT, radar and sensors, space and other, as well as unmanned systems.
In their unmanned systems group, they call it full spectrum engineering support. They do high-tech payload integration and testing, real-time data services, complex flight operations. They also do some counter unmanned aircraft systems security kinds of activities. But it's an interesting company. They've been around for a long time, since 1974, although I think they've kind of changed their focus over the years. And here we see them competing along with General Atomics for this DARPA Gremlin project. David, when I look at this, I can think of a number of commercial kinds of applications for some of these technologies. I mean, there may be situations where, you know, you want to deploy a number of drones, let's say for searching for a missing person, for example, and have them do that in a coordinated fashion. I can just think of different commercial kinds of applications for the technologies that would come from this. Does DARPA work end up being only used for military applications, or is the things that are developed, is there a way for them to find a way into the commercial arena?
Oh, absolutely. DARPA, I mean, there are programs that DARPA has done in aviation have shown up on, you know, DARPA was the creator of the winglet, you know, that we now see on almost every airliner and variations and themes of. So that was one of the original studies was done by DARPA for winglets. So, I mean, that technology would pass forward into the civilian community. And I can think of other ones where, you know, we talk about swarms of drones flying into hurricanes, you know, for hurricanes, you know, as we're sitting in this bombogenesis weather system, you could fly drones into the hurricanes to do sampling or any sort of sampling where you need to recover the samples quickly. Or if you, for another good use probably would be delivering supplies in disaster areas.
Ah, yes. So, well, it starts out sounding like it's a military item. Long term, it isn't necessarily exclusively military. So bears watching. And I guess it's moving along pretty quickly. I mean, if they're talking about demonstration tests, flights in 2019, that's pretty near term.
That's only next year.
Right.
So let's move on from the NBC affiliate WITN in Greenville, North Carolina. North Carolina government plans drone workshops for 2018. Now, North Carolina has been active. We've talked about them over the last couple of years. Very active about state regulations on drones. So North Carolina Department of Transportation is planning free drone workshops for public safety agencies.
Yeah, I found this kind of fascinating. They'll be hosting regional workshops, and we'll have a link to their webpage that describes those. But they'll be conducting those throughout the state. The purpose of these workshops is, they say, to educate agencies on the safe and beneficial use of drones, to provide updates on the latest federal and state regulations, and also to look at best practices for safe operations and data management. Now, there is a drone license required in the state of North Carolina above and beyond what the FAA might require. Doesn't apply to recreational drone users, but commercial drone users, public agency drone users have to obtain this license. So very interesting. There's a safety guide, the Operating Unmanned Aircraft Systems in North Carolina guide. It's a PDF document, 47 pages. And we'll put that in the show notes, or we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's prep for the knowledge test. And it has a lot of interesting information. You know, it's I'm not sure what other states may or may not be doing with regards to providing this kind of information to their public service agencies. But this almost feels like it could be a, you know, a good guide or perhaps even a best practice that other states could look at and incorporate into their process, you know, where that's applicable.
Yeah. The other thing is with this being the first show of the year and maybe you're new to drones, this is a good start to get a feel of, you know, you got a drone for Christmas. What do you do? And we're happy you found us. But this would be a good start. Download or just read the PDF and get a feel of the regulations that are involved. So I went through it and did not a heavy read, but I did a fairly thorough read, and it's got a lot of good information in it, like going down and downloading the app, know before you fly. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. So if you're new, this is a good place to start on where, now that you've got your drone, what do you do now? So moving on to a little deeper knowledge, drones are diving under Antarctic ice to map unseen portions of our world. This is from futurism.com. University of Washington in Seattle is planning to use 7 underwater robots to explore an Antarctic ice shelf.
We talk about drones in the air, unmanned aircraft in the air, but there's some similarities with some of these underwater kinds of vehicles.
Yeah, unmanned submersible vehicles, USVs. It does say that, you know, water is a fluid just like air, so basically they're flying through water. But they're going to spend a year studying the melting process with 3 sea glider self-propelled drones and 4 drifting boats. Sea gliders swim by adjusting their buoyancy and using mechanical wings and sonic buoys for navigation. Communications are done through orbiting satellites. So they are technically flying through water.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, the University of Washington has a sea glider fabrication center, and again, we'll put that link in the show notes. And they provide these sea gliders, but also something called deep gliders, as well as operator training, glider refurbishment. It's a division of the School of Oceanography at the College of the Environment. The deep glider is kind of similar to these sea gliders, but it's a long range ocean glider, and it has a 6,000 meter operating depth, so it can go almost anywhere in the ocean. The sea gliders can go down to 1,000 meters, and they take measurements using sensors autonomously, and they can operate down there for really long periods of time, 9 months or more, on one set of batteries. So that's pretty impressive. Now, it seems that these vehicles come from Kongsberg Underwater Technologies Incorporated. And the reason I think that is because the Sea Glider Fabrication Center notes that they have a license agreement with Kongsberg, and the university can only produce these sea gliders for customers inside of the University of Washington. So if you're not part of that university, but think that this is something that you might be interested in. I guess the idea is that you would go to Kongsberg direct and negotiate the craft that meets your demands.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of, it's kind of neat that they're trying to promote the oceanography. What was really kind of impressive is the amount of sensors these carry, which is connectivity and temperature sensors, as well as pressure sensors and an altimeter transducer, and oxygen sensor and eco sensors for fluorometry or fluids, as well as the communicating methods to get the information up to the satellites back home. So they're carrying a large payload as well as being a long distance thing.
And of course, the idea here is that we don't know a lot about the sort of the dynamics of the melting of Antarctic shelf ice, and so that's the research that these are going to focus on. The Sea Glider Fabrication Center also has a link to an interesting video. It's actually a National Geographic program, a 45-minute program. And if you're interested in learning more about not necessarily this specific project, but just the general concept of what's happening with ice shelves, you can take a look at that. It's called Earth Underwater. And we'll put that right in the show notes as well, so you'd be able to find that easily. So we have an interesting story that we ran across. It's from something called the Aviation Acorn. Drone operator sues Black Hawk pilot for destroying drone over Staten Island. this is an interesting story, and it's made some rounds on Twitter. But this is,
and unfortunately, I sort of okay, folks, I'll own up to it. I didn't realize it was Aviation Acorn that this was on. I thought it was aviation.com. So I evidently thought it was a legitimate story. So I'm sorry.
But it's kind of amusing. This relates to that collision last September between a Phantom quadcopter and an Army Black Hawk helicopter that happened over Staten Island, that area in New York. And when you start reading this story, you start to think, well, you know, okay, it's interesting. The guy is going to sue the Army because they damaged his helicopter. But as you start reading it, you know, you start to, well, you get some antenna signals that suggest that maybe something's not quite right here. He starts to talk about how the helicopter pilot should have been watching out for his drone. They must have intentionally damaged it, and all these kinds of things. But when you start to look at the other stories at the Aviation Acorn, it reminds me a little bit of
The Onion.
The Onion, yes, it's kind of that sort of humor. So I guess the lesson here is, you know, look, you have to look critically at what it is that you're being presented with these days, because it's not always what it seems to be.
We got hacked. It was fake news.
Oh, dear.
But to make up for it today, I found something that's near and dear to my co-host's heart.
You did. Yes, you did.
Which is, this is from UASmagazine.com. Ballard, an in situ partner on UAS fuel cell propulsion systems. Take it away, Mr. Fuel Cell.
Well, what we have here is Ballard Power Systems, and they're working with in situ to develop a fuel cell, actually a fuel cell propulsion system for the Scan Eagle. They call it a next generation of high performance fuel cell. Now, I think Ballard and in situ have been working together for a couple of years developing fuel cells, but this is a follow-on contract for extended durability testing. This is for a 1.3 kilowatt fuel cell propulsion system. And they're going to integrate this with the Scan Eagle. And that has some advantages. For one thing, lower noise, greater range, increased electrical power. There are a lot of reasons why you might want to replace an internal combustion engine powering a large drone with something like a fuel cell. So we're seeing more and more fuel cells being applied to unmanned aircraft. It's definitely a trend, I think, David.
It's definitely a trend, and it's like 3D printing, where these sort of peripheral technologies all sort of are being developed parallel and slowly mixing back and forth to each other to become bigger. So, I mean, fuel cells are definitely important because, especially for things going forward like noise reduction, you know, if we want drones flying all over neighborhoods delivering packages, we don't want them sounding like a bunch of angry bees. Higher electric output, that's also important because we're flying more and more complex sensors that require lots of energy. So
right.
There's a lot of reasons why this fuel cell technology is important. It's also usually lighter than a normal combustion engine. So light, more power, there's a lot of advantages that we would understand that this would be why technology would be growing in this field.
I hope we see some trickle down into other areas as well, because I think some other completely non-aviation related areas might benefit from advances in fuel cell technology. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Are you talking about Formula One again?
There is Formula E now, which is electric powered open wheel racers. They don't use fuel cells, but yeah, I'd like to see a fuel cell powered automobile. I'd like to see a box in the backyard next to the house, fuel cell powering the house. That sounds like a really interesting way to generate your energy. But I think we have to wait a while for that.
Well, we've been doing this a while. We can keep going. And we really do need to get somebody on about fuel cells just for your education and your edification and your enjoyment. So anybody out there that's a fuel cell expert, let us know. Our next one is another one of those drones for good stories. Uber for Blood, or how Rwandan delivery robots are saving lives. This is from TheGuardian.com. Last May, in episode 146, we talked about the UPS Foundation partnership with Zipline and Gavi Vaccine Alliance to explore using drones to transform the way of saving medicines like blood vaccines delivered across the world. The UPS Foundation has awarded $800,000 in grant money to support the initial launch initiative in Rwanda using Zipline fixed-wing drones. Well, now we're starting to get results from that $800,000.
The results in Rwanda look pretty good. We see in this article that the Rwandan Health Ministry has delivered more than 5,500 units of blood over the past year using these Zipline drones. And one of the features of that is the delivery time and how that's really been slashed dramatically. This is delivery to really remote regions in Rwanda. And it's been cut from the 4 hours that was typical to an average of 30 minutes, around half an hour. That's a real significant drop in the delivery time. Now, Zipline has blood that it delivers from its base to 12 regional hospitals, and each of those hospitals serves about 500,000 people. So this is a big success story, I think, in Rwanda with drone package delivery, in this case, medical supplies.
Interesting enough, the doctor has an app and logs into the Zipline order site. A confirmation tells them the Zip drone is on its way. The Zip drone is a fixed wing, so it's fast. It runs about 60 miles an hour. The doctor gets a message when the drone is about a minute out. A package is dropped by parachute, and the drone returns to base. Kind of like dropping candy to kids on a Berlin airlift. But really, fast delivery, effective delivery. Now, the one thing you can say about Rwanda is they don't really have a lot of weather issues. It would be interesting to see how effective these things would be in our normal universe right now, like what we have going on with bombogenesis and snowstorms. But really good use of getting drones out in the open and showing what good they can do.
There's an interesting quote from Keller Renato. He's the Zipline co-founder and CEO. He's quoted saying, some of the biggest, most powerful technology companies in the world are still trying to figure out how to do this, but East Africa is showing them all the way. The work in Rwanda has shown the world what's possible when you make a national commitment to expand healthcare access with drones and help save lives. And now Zipline plans to launch another drone delivery network in Tanzania. And they say it's going to be the world's largest drone delivery network. So based on their success and their experience in Rwanda, I think we can look forward to some good results from that country as well. So they're doing great things in Africa. David, they have a video, a Zipline video that describes how medical deliveries with these drones have been saving lives in Rwanda. And I think we can make that our video of the week.
Sounds like a plan. I enjoyed it. It's pretty educational. Maybe I need to shoot for the stars and see if we can get somebody from Zipline on the show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I guess with that, Max, we should wrap up our first episode of 2018. Do you know that this year we're going to hit 250 episodes?
It's amazing. It's hard to believe. It's crept up kind of quickly, it feels like. But we definitely want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. Again, this has been episode 225. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes have links to all the news stories, the documents, some photos, all kinds of stuff that supports the conversation that David and I have just had. You can find that at the UAVDigest.com/225.
Also, we want you to become part of our Slack listener team. We have our diehard fans and experts that are hang out on our Slack team. It's invitation only, so it's in-depth and a nice club that you can join and join the conversation. You can do that by sending us a request for an invitation. You do that by sending it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Likewise, if you want to send us a story that you want us to talk about or want us to send us a new video of the week that you maybe shot on your new drone that you got over the holidays, you can do that by sending it to feedback@theuavdigest. Or if you need to want to talk to Max or me, just take out feedback and replace it with David or Max. And of course, you can join us on Twitter @theuavdigest or Facebook, facebook.com/uavdigest. And if you're new to the show and you like it, leave a review on your podcatcher, either iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Likewise, if you want to buy some swag, you can do some through our Cafe Press store at cafepress.com/theuavdigest. So if this is your first episode, welcome. If this is your first episode of 2018, welcome back. And I guess with that, I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.